It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already mid-September, September 19th and 20th, depending on when you're listening to this. If you're listening to this on Saturday, September 19th, the show airs right after the 9 o'clock news, and if you're listening to this on Sunday, September 20th, it airs right after the 7 o'clock news. So this show has afforded me many opportunities to talk about wellness, to feature community partners, also to get the information out there that despite the recent announcement from the World Health Organization, which suggested to put off preventative dental care, you really should get your preventative dental care. And while that was certainly valid back in March 16th, it's no longer valid in the United States. So we actually have seen in the month of July and August claims that exceeded the July and August of 2019. So we're in good shape in the dental side of things. In terms of community partners, I mean, to be candid, the COVID, the pandemic, the economic crisis definitely has hurt, you know, various, you know, not-for-profits. I think they're all hanging in there. They're trying to do things virtually. And this weekend's guest is Jim Chase, who's the president and CEO of the Seacoast Science Center. And, Jim, thank you for joining me this weekend. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and share a little bit of the Science Center story with you.
Perfect. So, of course, just in the spirit of transparency, Delta Dental is a longtime supporter and sponsor of Close Encounters, Tank in the Gulf of Maine exhibit, et cetera. So, but let's, how about this? How about if we start with your background? I always get the feedback from the show that we really like to hear the background of, you know, the leader of the particular organization. So I know you're currently president and CEO of the Seacoast mm-hmm. Science Center, and you actually began your nonprofit career in 1997. So tell us about your varied background.
Well, sure. I started with the Seacoast Science Center actually way back in 1997. I had finished a stint in graduate school where I studied hydrology, and oceanography had been my prior background. And I had the chance to come to the Science Center in 97 as a contract employee. I stayed on here at the Science Center, sort of with the ocean in my blood, through around 2013. Then I went off and worked for a larger national nonprofit in Boulder, Colorado. It was a hard place to live, yes, yes. Not a lot of ocean in Boulder, Colorado.
That's true, yeah.
You got to know where to look in the rocks and the sediments to see the evidence of the old oceans there.
That's funny you mentioned Colorado because of the two places, I mean, I'd never leave New Hampshire, but if I had to, that would be the one place, and I have some of my kids out there. Now, when I go out to see my grandchildren in Breckenridge,
yep.
And I have a sister that's out there as well, Denver, that I always run into some New Hampshire kids, or I call them kids, but they're now in their 30s, that grew up with my kids. And so it seems like, you know, if you're not living in New Hampshire with the ocean and stuff, then you're at least going to spend some time in Colorado. So how did we get you back?
Well, as it turns out, my longtime associate, Wendy Lull, who was the president here at the Science Center, retired in 2017, and I looked at my wife and I said, that's the job that's going to get me to come back east at this point. I felt there was a lot for us still to do here in New England and at the Science Center. I felt that the organization had and has a great deal of potential, and it was a pretty easy decision to pack up the car and head back east when I had the opportunity. And I'm really excited to be able to be here to begin to craft the next chapter for the organization. Unfortunately, the pandemic has thrown a bit of a wrench in the works, but we are a resilient lot, and we're going to get through it.
So. Great. So why don't you, I mean, it sounds strange that I asked you this, but I think it's probably a good idea if you tell people where you're located.
Sure.
And before we get into, you know, how the pandemic has forced you to, for a while, between March 15th and July 4th, close down, tell us kind of like the overall sort of strategy that you use to, you know, raise money, et cetera?
Sure. Well, the Seacoast Science Center is an independent nonprofit organization operating within Odeorn Point State Park in Rye, New Hampshire. We are blessed with a fabulous location here within the park. The park on this side of Route 1A is about 130-some-odd acres. The Science Center is a 15,000-square-foot museum space. And from here, we launch a traditional museum, aquarium-style experience, as well as hosting upwards of 90,000 visitors a year, 32,000 school kids. We do an awful lot of educational programming, summer camps, camps during every school vacation. It's a pretty active place, and we've been around for 28 years. I can't tell you the number of times where some young professional comes in to sell us photocopier lease or some sort of professional services, only to find out that they had been here when they were little kids in one field trip or another. It's really kind of gratifying to see.
That's awesome.
The legacy.
And, you know, and as a former chair of the State Board of Education, and when I was on that board for a dozen years, I mean, really pushed, you know, real life learning, and of course, you're emblematic of that, you know, to a T. You know, it's great to see. Your website is seacoastsciencecenter.org. How do you sustain yourself financially?
Well, the Seacoast Science Center has a mixed sort of revenue model. Of course, we do admissions. People pay for admissions, and there's memberships. Our school programs are typically, you know, paid field trip. Our camp programs are paid. But we also, as a nonprofit, has to raise funds through traditional charitable means. We have fundraising events. We have annual appeals. We compete for grants and other foundation funding. Historically, the Science Center has been, I would say, 70% mission-related earned income and maybe 30% traditional philanthropy. And that sort of model has kept us insulated from some of the ups and downs of the economy. The pandemic is an interesting situation because it's really impacted our earned income. When we shut down and we can't entertain guests, that goes right to our bottom line. And it's been really a profound impact on us this year. There has been some other funding available, of course, and our donors have been incredibly generous in this situation, which has helped us, you know, see our way through. We're planning for 2021 at this point. We're holding it together as best we can this year.
Well, your energy level is awesome. I know that, and I've been doing a lot of these shows with various executive directors, CEOs of not-for-profits, ranging from Humanities to the Hampshire Business Committee for the Arts to the Arthritis Foundation to juvenile diabetes. So, at all of these organizations, some of whom have been able to get a little bit of the federal grant money, but in no way has it been able to match, you know, what the prior revenue stream was. So in terms of, and we'll talk after the commercial break, we'll get into the wonderful suite of new online and self-guided exploration programs. But in terms of your staff, were you able to keep most of them on board, or how did that whole process work?
We were able to keep all of our staff on board intact through the end of June, at which point we didn't lay anyone off. We were able to just trim hours and enroll in some programs that kept our staff at least half-time in place. Some of the part-timers were cut back a little bit. And we'll be able to keep that model through the balance of 2020. Given the revenue that we've had and given the that little bit of savings on payroll, we'll be able to make it through and keep. I was very concerned with making sure we could keep our intellectual capital as intact as possible. It is hard to come by. It is our biggest investment. And these people that I get to work with every day are really critically important to the success of the organization.
And we don't take
them lightly.
Exactly. And I always get a feel for that. I know this year we didn't have the race, but I get out there at least once a year because we, you know, have done that race all these years. And then, but just obviously after the race or before, we get to spend some time with your wonderful team, and it's like it's clear they're experts, you know, in their field and they're passionate. It's great. Now tell us, I found this really, really cool and strategic that you continued the environmental day camps, which is not only a valued educational experience, but kind of forms child care service for the members of the community. So in order to pull that off, though, you had to limit other aspects of, you know, adult visits. So how did you strategically formulate that? It was a brilliant idea.
Well, we had to kind of look at it from a mission perspective. In light of the pandemic, it was really unclear what our visitation would be like. And we recognized that the value of the education and the community service in terms of daycare was really likely to have more mission impact and more financial impact over the course of the summer, given that we weren't sure we were going to have a significant visitation at all. So we worked with Gopher, and we worked with New Hampshire Division of Parks and Recreation and Health and Human Services and Rye Public Health to come up with a plan that allowed our day camps to operate pretty much in full form over the course of the summer. They're different than they have been in the past, of course. But the kids are having a good time, and I think the parents are thrilled that their kids can be out here having an important and a social experience. I don't know that I'd anticipated how important that was going into it.
Exactly. It's phenomenal because they're getting the marine science education, but they're outside. They're getting the connections, and the moms and dads can go to work outside the home if they're working without worry. So, wow, what a formula!
Yeah, we've been very fortunate to have the space to do it. We have, like I said, the 130-acre park. We have an outdoor function tent with sidewalls. It's 3,200 square feet, and then because we're closed to the public while the camp kids are here, they have the run of the 15,000 square foot building as we need to. So we're not space limited, which is great.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. This weekend with me, September 19th and 20th, is Jim Chase, who's the president and CEO of the Seacoast Science Center. And prior to the break, we were talking about the wonderful strategic initiative that Jim and his team were able to pull off by having the environmental day camps this summer, which provided a valued educational child care service, but also, you know, a commitment to keep the camper safe and just an awesome educational experience. The Seacoast Science Center is in Rye. But, of course, the reality is, like all of us, I know in my case, Northeast Delta Dental, we have roughly 250 employees, and there's 50 of us working on campus, and, you know, 200 are virtual. So we've all had to, you know, make accommodations. So tell us how you conceptualized going virtual, and tell us ultimately how you and your team developed a suite of the new of online and self-guided exploration resources and how they work.
Sure, I'm happy to. I'm really proud of the way that the team pulled this together. And boy, the idea of, let me paint a picture of where we were on March 14th, the day before we closed to the public. We were preparing for our spring field trip season, and in a typical spring field trip season, we will see 25,000 school kids through our doors. We closed on March 15th in response to the emergency orders, as did most of the schools. And with that went our entire school program season. Instead of seeing 25,000 kids, we saw exactly zero. So what that did for us was we immediately started to repurpose our program people to thinking about what we can deliver sort of digitally and virtually to the schools, and particularly to the parents who very, very early on in the process found themselves being, tutors and homeschoolers who had not anticipated that prior. So the first thing we did was build a weekly newsletter. Doesn't do it justice because it's really a collection of Science Center curated and developed digital education products for those parents to use with their kids while they were spending time at home trying to supplement their.
So you are a godsend to parents of younger children. I can assure you of that.
I think so. Well, I'll say this, that in the matter of a month or two of that, we had literally hundreds of thousands of meaningful engagements with that data, with that information. We had hundreds of thousands of people log on to see the videos and leave comments and download the different materials that we had put out there for them. It was thrilling to be that well received. I was again incredibly proud of the team. And the next thing they pivoted to, if I may, is something called the Teachers Learning Connection. Once we had a model fairly well set for home learning, we wanted to provide some more rigorous lesson plans that were aligned with state education frameworks for the teachers to use, because the teachers at that point were starting to scramble to create online curriculum to finish up their season, finish up the school spring school season. And the team moved over to do that. Very well received again. We were able to work with some of our teachers that we have longstanding relationships with to make sure that we fleshed out those products and kept them on point. They touched on such topics as food webs and photosynthesis, adaptations, tides and currents, all things that are in those frameworks that the teachers have to deliver to their kids through the course of the school year.
So for the spring going into the summer camps, I mean, certainly the spring was kind of like for all virtual learning opportunities. It was a quick scramble to get it ready. It sounds like it's awesome. And so now, given that the new school year, many, many school districts at best will be hybrid and a lot of them are virtual, I'm assuming you've leveraged that for this fall school year's virtual field trips.
Yeah, we have two things coming up for this fall. One is a series of virtual field trips that that we will make available to the schools. We can do them either as taped or as live. The live ones are more fun because we can interact with the kids. The other thing that we're going to be doing for the fall for the hybrid, some of the hybrid models and remote models, is we're going to extend our day camp model weekdays into the fall, where parents can send their kids here and they'll have a combination of three things happening during that day. There'll be some proctored homework time for them. There'll be some environmental education, and then we have some certified teachers on staff who can serve as tutors or help with individual education plans, whatever the parents may feel their kids need from a more formal education perspective. And we're really excited that between that program and the virtual field trip programs, we'll be able to stay engaged with the teaching community that has been so crucial to us for so many years.
I mean, it's incredible. I have a big, huge smile because I know this. You know, this was leveraged and expedited because of the pandemic. But this is really this kind of virtual learning opportunities is some of the things that we were conceiving way back, decades ago on the State Board of Education, and to see it happening and to sort of, in some respects, since it is a virtual field trip, like even a school where heretofore maybe they couldn't afford, the buses, to get to Rye. Everybody, you might actually have broadened your audience. I know virtual isn't the same as being on site, but boy, this is incredible.
Yeah, we're really pleased, and I am not approaching the development of these digital products and virtual programming from the point of view of, once the pandemic begins to resolve, we go back to normal. I think these have real value moving forward.
Absolutely.
And we're treating them that way, and that's why it was a real easy decision to invest resources in this.
That's a great point, and I know that when I talk to other CEOs, and regardless of the industry, the muscle strength that we've learned during the pandemic and the creativity, a lot of that can continue to be leverage in years to come. And of course, moreover, you're probably you know, until there's a vaccine, this is going to be the status quo anyway for a while. And but even way down the road, this is awesome. So let's talk about the weekends. So we during the week is kind of, you know, reserved for the children and the students and so forth. But the Seacoast Science Center is actually open on visits for Saturdays and Sundays, correct?
Yeah, we are. After, July 4th was our first opening day, and we're open weekends for the public and for our members. It is by reservation only. We reserve for 3 2-hour time blocks, 10 to 12, 12 to 2, 2 to 4. You can go to the website, seacoastsciencecenter.org, and make those reservations. And because we're within the state park, if you are not a member, there is both a park fee and a science center fee, but you can address all of that when you log on to seacoastsciencecenter.org. We can do that as sort of one-stop shopping. We've cut back on the total number of people in the building at any one time. It's 75 in any one of those blocks. We've also added a variety of do-it-yourself exploration programming. Historically, we would gather groups together and in close proximity do our hands-on programming with them. That's not practical in this environment. So what we've made is a variety of different do-it-yourself explorations, and we'll give you a laminated card or whatever that may be, and send you off into the park to explore the rack line or explore the tide pools or go over into the salt marsh or explore some of the history here in the park. You can come back to the Science Center if you have questions, and we can sort of flesh out that conversation for you. And that, it's been really, really well received. Really happy to be able to provide that for folks.
And it sounds like we want to become members, so it's seacoastsciencecenter, all one word, .org. Can you spend just a couple of minutes on marine mammal rescue? There's been a lot of noise recently, unfortunate death of a woman in Maine, for example, on the white shark. So tell us the role of the Seacoast Science Center, and I know that you can follow Marine Mammal Rescue on Facebook, but tell us a little bit of what's going on that front.
Sure. The Seacoast Science Center is the federally recognized response authority, it's a mouthful right there, for marine mammals between the Maine border and the Annisquam River down in Massachusetts, sort of the north side of Cape Ann. Science Center staff responds to every report of stranded seals or whales or dolphins in that vicinity. We participate in the collection of scientific data on those animals. We run a group of volunteers that help us with that. And it's been a very active area for us since 2014. Over that period, I think we've responded to over 1,000 incidents of stranded marine mammals in that region. The white shark incidents have been something that has certainly hit our radar screen this summer. Seals, as we all now know, are a prey species for the sharks, for the white sharks, which are apex predators. And what seems to be happening is that as the seal populations rebound and get stronger throughout the Gulf of Maine, the sharks are doing the same. The sharks are getting they're expanding their range a little bit. It's not unusual to have great whites in the Gulf of Maine. There's been records back into the late 1800s of documented great whites in the Canadian Maritimes. It's not outside the range at all. For years, we hadn't seen them in these areas because there weren't that many seals. And now, as the seals come back, there will be more.
So when you see this whole holistic picture, this ecosystem, it makes so much sense. So you've I could talk to you, Jim, for another 2 hours. I mean that, but we need some more members. SeacoastScienceCenter.org. It is open on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, 10 to 4. But as described by Jim, there's limited capacity, so you need to have reservations. It's easy to get to 570 Ocean Boulevard in Rye. It's a we're not-for-profit, so donations are welcome, corporate sponsorships like what Delta Dental does. But
thank you, Tom.
Members as well. We're happy to do that. And thank you, Jim, also for looking after the youth population as well. So we're running out of time. So again, it's seacoastsciencecenter.org. Jim Chase, thank you for being a very passionate and clear and wonderful leader of another gem that we have in New Hampshire. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it a great deal.
Again, seacoastsciencecenter, all one word, .org.